Bring It On is a public affairs program exploring the people, issues, and events affecting the African-American communities in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Bring It On is a forum for the people, by the people, produced by an independent team of volunteers working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana,
and financially supported by listeners like you.
Hello, good evening. I'm Liz Mitchell, and welcome to Bring It On, a multiple award-winning radio broadcast in our 19th year as Indiana's only weekly community radio show. We are committed to exploring the people, issues, and events impacting the African-American community.
Good evening. I'm Gloria Howell. Anna Pauline Polly Murray was born on November 20th, 1910. After graduating from Hillsdale High School, a historically Black school in Durham, North Carolina, Murray moved to New York City to continue her education and improve her chances of getting into college. Because she was female, she could not attend her first choice, Columbia University. The first women wouldn't receive diplomas from Columbia's undergraduate program until 1987. Murray enrolled at Hunter College, which she would call the Poor Girls Radcliffe, where she earned a bachelor's degree in English in 1933.
During the Great Depression, Murray worked with both the Women's Auxiliary of the Civil Conservation Corps, CCC, and with the Works Progress Administration, WPA. She became a member of the Peace and Justice Organization, Fellowship of Reconciliation, FAR. And in 1940, 15 years prior to Rosa Parks' protest of Alabama's bus segregation law, Murray and a fellow FOR member, Adeline McBean, were arrested for refusing to give up their seats on a segregated bus in Petersburg, Virginia.
Inspired to study law to address injustice, Murray applied to the University of North Carolina School of Law, but was denied admission based on her race. Following in her father's footsteps, Murray enrolled at Howard University's law school in 1941, becoming the only woman in her class. At Howard, which is an HBCU historically Black college, Murray experienced sexism and coined the term Jane Crow to describe the discrimination she faced as a woman.
As a law student at Howard, Murray had joined the Congress of Racial Equality, CORE, at the height of the civil rights movement. Murray offered a critique of the 1963 March on Washington, which was organized primarily by one of her CORE colleagues, Bayard Rustin. And this is what she said: "It is indefensible to call a national march on Washington and send out a call which did not have one single woman leader."
Murray extended her critique to the broader civil rights movement as a whole, saying, "I have been increasingly perturbed over the blatant disparity between the major role which Negro women have played and are playing in the crucial grassroots levels of our struggle and the minor role of leadership they have been assigned in the national policymaking decisions."
Later on in life, Murray switched paths and embarked on a new career in the Episcopal Church. Murray began her studies in General Theological Seminary in New York City in 1973. She earned a bachelor's degree in divinity in 1976. The following year, Murray was ordained as an Episcopal priest, a first for the African-American woman. Murray died from pancreatic cancer on July 1st, 1985.
Resilience Productions will host a theatrical event dedicated to the invincible Polly Murray, a gifted scholar, theorist, sociopolitical activist, essayist, poet, attorney, and Episcopal priest. Polly Murray, I've Come Full Circle, offers a rare glimpse into the life and contributions of a true 20th century trailblazer. Joining us to discuss this project are Resilience Productions members Gladys Devane, Danielle Bruce, Kate Braun, and our Bring It On assistant producer, Liz Mitchell. Ladies, welcome to Bring It On.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, resilience is in the house. All right, let's tell our listening audience what made you even think about all the women that we could have talked about, remarkable women. Why Polly Murray? It may not be obvious to our listening audience.
Well, the thing that struck me the most was the multi-levels of engagement of Polly. This woman was not, by any stretch of the imagination, a single-minded person. She was gutsy. She was in-your-face activist. She was, you know, everything that I wish I could be. And she kept rediscovering and figuring out ways to challenge the system every time she ran into a problem. And I'd never heard of her, frankly speaking. And someone, you know, said to me, because they know what we do, "Hey, Polly Murray, you need to know about this woman." And the more I read, the more I thought, wow. And so that's why I brought her to Danielle and Liz and said, "Hey, guys, we need to do this."
Danielle, what were your thoughts about hearing about Polly Murray? Because we had other people in mind. So what do you think?
Well, I was intrigued immediately. I was a little freaked out that I had never heard of her either. I thought, how did this woman slip through the cracks? Because she is so remarkable and such a pioneer on so many fronts that it made sense to me that we brought her to everyone's attention, you know. And it's amazing the amount of the accomplishments that she had and the fights that she had to get them. I mean, it was pretty incredible. And yeah, I hope we can show just her resilience and her innovation and making her path. And it was incredible to me. And I mean, very inspiring. She was a very inspiring woman, person, period.
So Dr. Glow just did just a little synopsis of her life. It is so broad and so much. Gladys, how were you able to decide what story do we tell of her life? Because we could be there all day and not even hit on this woman's life. So how were you able to condense it and decide what part of her life you were going to tell?
That was incredibly difficult. And I kept asking Danielle, we have the ability, because we work as a team with writer, producer, your historian, to constantly give each other feedback and ask questions as to how can this be presented? What's the best way to do this in 50 minutes to an hour? And so some choices had to be made. And even after the script, as we were developing the script, I kept saying to myself, I'm not doing this woman justice. I'm just not doing this woman justice. There's no way we can present to the public really what this woman's accomplishments were. And I and Danielle was constantly there saying, but we can't tell all the stories. What we can do is introduce the audience to who this woman is and light the candle in the audience to make them want to go out and find out more about her. And to be very honest, even just last week, I said to Danielle, did we do enough? She said, well, we can't do any more in 50 minutes. And so I chose what I thought were the most significant accomplishments that would register with the audience. And then I incorporated that into her story.
Mm-hmm. Love it. I love the fact that you're having to make these kind of creative decisions. And something that you mentioned about running that through with Danielle, Gladys, when you said, hey, like, is this enough? Or what do I talk about? That sort of thing. Can you talk a little bit about the creative process in general? Even you can talk about this particular production or previous productions, but I want to know if I was a fly on the wall, what do conversations look like between the producer, the historian, the writer? How does that take shape?
Ah, that's a wonderful process. May I on this, may I defer to Danielle, because we've had some really interesting interactions.
I will say that one of the best things, and it's a luxury because most of the time, if you're producing a play or directing a play, you don't always have access. Oftentimes, you don't have access to your playwright. You don't have access to the building of a show, and you get the show you get, and you have to direct it or you have to produce it, and you so there's you have no say in how things come alive on stage, really. And so it's pretty remarkable to sit with Gladys and get to read through some of the very first iterations of the show and say, okay, I think this is really remarkable and it's in a great direction, but this is my feedback. And Liz will say this is her feedback and this is what we're kind of going for. And I think a lot of times we really do listen to each other and we trust each other, which is the helpful thing. And most of all, and go from there. And then we all know that ultimately what we're here to do is this is handed off to the audience once the show's produced. I mean, it's not our show anymore, it's their show. And so what we don't want to do is have a show that they can essentially just Google. You know, like if you say Pauly Murray and you just Google Pauly Murray, we're trying to give you all the pertinent information about Pauly Murray in an imaginative way. I mean, for instance, she was a poet. So we use a lot of her poetry throughout the show, and it really texturizes the production, you know, but it's not just it could just be a chronicle of her life, but you could also Google that and go to Wikipedia and get the exact same thing. So we're hoping that the investment that you make in Polly is from a different perspective than just one of just gathering facts. And that's kind of what we sit and talk about. And we just tr constantly are trying to figure out what is an innovative way to present this, what is a way that's engaging for the audience. And also, because we are inspired by actual events, we want it to be as closely aligned to history as we can. But it's still, at the end of the day, is a work of fiction. We don't have all of that information. No matter how close it is to fact, it does stray and go in a direction that is more imaginative. And it's for the stage. You know, that's I'm not going to hold anybody hostage. We want them to be, you know, really enjoying it. So, Kate, were you going to say something about that?
No, I'm just so impressed how you did it because I found Pauly Murray, excuse me, maybe 3 years ago at the library, the Menil Marshall Library. I was talking to a Dakar. Anyway, he was there and we chatted a lot. And I said, can I just look around? And I have no clue how that song in a weary throat came into my hand, but it did. And I read it. I proceeded to send a copy immediately after I bought two copies, one to a gentleman in Seattle who's in med school. And I've tried to inform people of her for the last couple of years. I think I've given away maybe four books of hers already. And I have three of hers. Well, some are the ones I've not given away. Anyway, I was so impressed I couldn't hardly stand it. And one day I run into Liz at this party or fundraiser, and whatever. And I said, oh, what are you doing next? Because I really loved your performance, Liz, in the last play that you did. She said, oh, you probably wouldn't know. And then she told me, and I just jumped for joy that this was going to take place. And I just hugged her, said, oh my God, thank you so much. And then, because of Polly's history and her heritage, there actually is a person that looks like me. And I'm so honored to be a part of it that I just usually cry. So, sorry. Yeah, it's very touching for me. So, thank you.
It's really awesome to hear Kate talk about this because here we are doing research about Polly, and she had slipped through the cracks for many of us. And Kate has known about her this whole time. She was on board in this project and was like, had books. She was giving everybody in the cast books, you know, of Pauly Murray's. And so it was kind of kismet that this happened this way. And I think it was really a remarkable, just yeah, remarkably lucky to have everybody come together and have the knowledge they had and the appreciation for her because it was. You have a different kind of investment when you are holding someone up that high and you honor them that way, you know, versus just taking on a script and saying, okay, I'm gonna breathe life into this character. That's already great enough. But then to really have to be thrilled to be able to bring this person to life because you've been a big fan of theirs for so long is really amazing, you know? And we, I think all of us were just blown away by Kate's contribution in many ways, but also the history she had. Mary was really cool.
I'd like to tell this little story. Danielle had asked me to get one last image for the play. And I was having a difficult time trying to find this headline. So all day, yet probably 4 hours yesterday morning, I said, I'm getting this. I'm going to find it. It's not going to be, I'm getting this. And after about 4 hours, I found a phone number, made a phone call, and talked to a head librarian in Durham, North Carolina. And over the phone, she started crying to me. I cannot believe you're doing this. It's your Aunt Polly Murray. And then she went on to say, well, you know, our things are copyrighted and all of this. And I said, here's our website. Check us out so you know we're legit. What else do you need me to do? I'll pay for whatever you ask. Just see if you can help me. I've been trying to get this. They are so excited about this. So I said, it's videotape. I promise you, I will send you a copy. And she went to the person over the library system there. They've reached out to me. And so we're going to collaborate on how to get the story that we're doing to Durham, North Carolina. So that was, what a good feeling to say, here in Indiana, we're talking about one of your people from there. Love and so that, that was, and that just happened yesterday.
Great. That's amazing. For those of you that are just joining us, we're here with Danielle Bruce, Kate Braun, Gladys Devane, and our assistant producer, Liz Mitchell, all the women of Resilience Productions. And we're talking about an amazing production that you should be, as you're listening now, Googling Monroe County History Center to get your tickets for this production, which is coming up in less than 1 week. And we are incredibly excited. So thank you again for joining us. Liz, wow, I'm sure that had to have had such an impact on you to have that conversation with folks in North Carolina who are deeply, you know, in I like the word Danielle used, invested in Polly Murray's story. And you talked about you all being invested as a cast and as storytellers, as writers, and as women in Polly's story. So can you talk a little bit about, whoever would like to take this, feel free, but how you intentionally think about investing the audience? And I know, and Kate mentioned a previous Resilience Productions play, and I remember going to the last one, and I just remember thinking like how intimate it was. And that was one of my favorite things about being in the space, because very seldom when you're in a big theater or even just thinking about place and space, it's hard to kind of connect sometimes to productions. As much as you love the story, it can sometimes seem a little distant. But I love that we're going to be in the History Center in this very intimate space. But also you talk about investment in the character and investment in the story. So how do you manage to facilitate that for the audience?
Oh, now I give credit to our director, Danielle Bruce, because she knows how to get the most out of each one of us. She knows how to connect with people. I like the fact that we go out and get members of the community to participate in what we're doing. So that brings more of the audience that we normally would have, because then these people, their relatives and friends are coming out to see them. So that brings in more people about what we do. I also hear after every show, people go, when we come to see Resilience Productions, when we leave, we have gained knowledge of something we didn't know before. I've heard that every time. So that makes us feel good that we've got that part of it. We're giving out information and sharing information, especially about remarkable women. Oh my God, that's just awesome in itself. So I'll let Danielle give her side of it.
Well, first of all, thank you, Liz, for that compliment. I appreciate it. And I do think about the audience's investment in the show and how to keep them engaged, because I think my awareness of our just general cultural attention span, I'm so aware of the fact that we have so much competition. It's so hard to keep, I mean, people just, they swipe when they're not interested. You know what I mean? Like the idea that they'll just tune out real quickly. And so it's a pretty remarkable thing in my mind. Growing up in the theater, I've always thought this, and I still think it, that you're in the same three-dimensional space as the people performing when you're an audience member. And that doesn't happen in any, really, in any other art form. And so it's so extraordinary to have these stories told and presented, and you could actually reach out and touch these people, where you have that psychological distance with a television, with a film screen. Even though it may be an incredible performance, there's still that distance psychologically, which you can kind of break through with theater. And I think about that. And then also, we want to get people as involved as possible, so we always close with a talkback. And that one of the greatest things about the talkback is it kind of has become our second act. You know, we don't have a traditional second act usually when we do the Remarkable Women series. So we treat the talkback as the second act. And we've been very lucky that we've had up to 80, 85% of the audience stay for the talkback, which I've been to talkbacks, and that's pretty rare. And so people are actually, they have questions. They want to know whether it's about the process or more about the person, or they just want to, they want to talk about what they felt. And it's been a really, it's a great opportunity for the audience to be engaged and get feedback and hear what they have to say, you know. And I think that that's been a real plus for us, you know, to make that part of the night every time, you know. And I do, I think that has made a huge difference.
And as the writer, I say up front, if the final product, I mean, if I have people in that audience leaving, not having learned something, then I have failed. And so in the back of my mind, when I am creating this along with Danielle, always in the back of my mind is, will the audience, the members of the audience, go away having learned something that they didn't already know? That, as Danielle said, that they can't Google. And so that is my primary goal. And I'm constantly asking the question. I guess that probably has to do with my 38 years of teaching. I just can't get past. I don't want people wasting their time. I want them to go away having learn something, you know, that they didn't know when they came in, you know, to this show.
My next question is, this is a question that someone asked me just recently. There's someone that knows the three of us, me, Danielle, and Gladys. And they said, how do three, let's put it nicely, strong-headed women who are strong, work together? And of course, they didn't know how long we've been working together. Do you not kids? Because I see the three of you are strong, on the verge of almost being bullheaded. I go, not us. So, Gladys, you start first, and then I'll let Danielle tell us, before I give you my answer, what my answer was. I'd like to hear what your answer is on that question.
To me, the bottom line is respect. And you've got to start with respecting the people that you work with. And if you respect the people that you work with, even when you disagree, you can talk about what it is you're disagreeing on, and you can come to grips with what it is you're disagreeing on. I don't assume, because I am the writer, I have the last word and the way this production should be presented on stage. I have a great deal of respect for the director. And so we will discuss, and, you know, she'll come to me and she'll say, you know, I think we need to rethink where this is positioned. Or I think we need to pull this out because it's slowing the show down. And we discuss and we come to an agreement. But the bottom line is respecting. And that, to me, that's the most important ingredient of the interaction between and among us.
Danielle?
I'm going to echo what Gladys said. I think the same. I think it's respect. And I think it's understanding that we all come to the table with our skill sets, you know, our strengths, and some things we do much better than others. And when we work together, there are times when there's something that I just am not very good at. I wouldn't be able to do or accomplish, like Liz collecting this incredible headline and how she is the most tenacious human being I know that would come and go after it and got it, which is unbelievable. We were just talking last week. We said, this is so important. And she said, I'm going to find it. I'm going to get it. And I wouldn't even know where to begin to go for that, you know, but we knew it was something that we needed for this production. So it's so remarkable that she got it. And thank you so much for that, Liz. But it was something that I wouldn't have even known where to begin. You know, so it's bringing our strengths to the table and respecting, exactly like Gladys said, when we don't agree. I mean, yep, if this goes across the board with each other, when you work with actors, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's got to be a respect. And then that, I think, will develop into a trust. And I think it has for us that we've been trusting each other, that we know that when it's her in her lane, that she's got that under control. I don't have to worry about it, you know? And so that's a great feeling. And I also think that, you know, you work with people that come on board and they see that in us, and then it's naturally extended to them, but it creates that environment, which I think is the healthiest way we can be.
Yeah. So your answers mimicked my answer to this person. First of all, is the respect and the trust. And then I said, you know, over the years, we've become family and we have love for one another. One thing we learned early on is to try and stay in your lane. And of course, there are times the lanes kind of crisscross, but we know we each have a strength to bring to the table. And if you stay in your lane, and then when you're asked, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Then you know you have permission to cross over and intertwine into someone else's lane when they ask you. So we learned that. I've had people ask me and my husband, where you and Danielle, how are you related? What's the connection here? You know, you're together. And we just said, you know, this is a love team here. We love each other. That's all you need to know. We're family and there's love here. That's it. That's the bottom line. So that kind of satisfied this one particular, but I thought, that's interesting. Especially getting three women together or any group of women together. As you probably know, Dr. Glow, that at times it could be kind of difficult, but with us, it's not so much the case.
Oh, it's an absolute joy.
Okay. Danielle, would you tell our listening audience when is this play?
Yes,
how can they get their tickets, the address, and all that pertinent information?
I will tell them. It's Pauli Murray, I've Come Full Circle, and it's at the Monroe County History Center, which is located at 202 East 6th Street. And the phone number is 332-2517. And you can get tickets by either calling them or online at monroehistory.org. You can quickly click on it and get your tickets. And the production dates are March 22nd, that's a Friday, the 23rd, Saturday at 6 p.m., or March 24th, which is a Sunday at 3 p.m.
Well, you've heard that, listening on it, and we will repeat that again before the end of the show. Just make sure you get your ticket. They're selling fast. Our shows normally do. So this is one show you do not want to miss. Okay, Dr. Glow?
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that information, Danielle. I've talked to pockets of people and they're like, oh, I'm going this day. Oh, I got a group going this day. I got a group going this day. So I'm excited for folks to get to experience Resilience Productions. And I'm thinking about how you described Liz as being tenacious and calling and getting this information. And I'm like, oh, so fitting for resilience, right? We don't stop. We persist. We keep going. We get what we need to get, and we're going to not let anybody get in the way. And I think I appreciate that most, with this being Women's History Month. And so for you all, if you could take a moment, we are celebrating Women's History Month, which, just like Black History Month, we celebrate women all day, every day, 24/7, 365, 366, whatever year it is. But can you talk about what this personally means to you to bring a story? Is there any part of Pauli Murray's story that resonates with you personally? Maybe any experiences that you've had, whether it be professionally or personally, that you can share with our listening audience.
Oh, yes. I don't have to think about that very long.
Here is this woman, this young lady, who was obviously very brilliant, very successful in high school, knew she was bright, and you know she could handle herself in any situation. And yet when she went off to college and she was thrown into an environment that the first time that she experienced an integrated academic environment, she began to question whether or not she was good enough. And I could relate to that. And that is something that the African-American race in general, women in particular, have always had to deal with, because they get it from every vantage point. You know, you're a woman and you can't do such and such. You're black and you can't do such and such. You're too young to, as someone said last week with a young lady, talking about a young lady that was looking for a job. Well, she's too qualified. You know, you're either overqualified or you're underqualified when you're black, you know. And so I really related to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kate, how about you?
I related to her persistence in her education. Everything she did was to learn, and nothing stopped her from getting her degrees. She was tried to they tried to stop her at many places, and I was not allowed to go to college because my parents said I could only go if I'd be a nurse or a teacher, and maybe they would try to find money. But I didn't want to be a nurse or a teacher. I wanted to be something big or special. And they said no, so I ended up not getting to go. But it was a lifelong dream of mine to get a college degree since I was a little girl, maybe 7 or 8. So by the time I was 39, I had beat down a lot of just women issues where they said, oh, you can't get a loan, you can't buy a car, you can't do this, you can't do that, you have to be married, blah, blah, blah. And I just finally, I went to college at the age of 39 and I got a degree after 16 years. So I never let anything stop me. And I think about that with her.
Yeah. So you virtually, Kate, you're saying you felt her pain. You could feel what Polly Murray went through.
I did. I felt it. Yeah. Right. And I mean, she had to do a whole lot more painful things than I did because of race. But I still empathized with her throughout her life.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Danielle?
Yeah. Well, I think that's an amazing story, Kate. And I think that I think it's how she handled confrontation and conflict and obstacles, how she went about it. And she was very smart about it. And I've worked my whole life not to treat everything so viscerally, you know, and where my reaction comes just right from the heart or the gut, and that really get it to my brain and process it so that my reaction, my response could actually lead to a solution, you know, and not because it's, I mean, and boy, did she tell people off in along the way? I mean, which I also thought was fantastic. But, you know, I mean, but it was in such a way that would actually lead down a path that could be a solution and make a change and actually make a change. Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't. But for her, I just love that that's how she went about it. She was very smart in how she handled these kinds of challenges. And then so much so that they would get, you know, they translate into law, you know? And so I think that she just knew that she had a way of seeing something that was bigger than just what was right in front of her and what was an accepted answer that did nobody any favors or any good. She was like, we can change this. We can rethink this, and it can be really actually a solution, you know, and pay attention to the things we should prioritize in life. And I was blown away by that and respect it so much. And I've always kind of tried to strive in that direction. You know, I mean, I'm certainly haven't been faced with some of the things she was faced with, but I will say that for the things in my own life, that was my goal.
And I also think that I was most impressed by the evolution, how she evolved, there is a statement in the play where First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt writes this letter to her and says to her in the letter that it's sometimes it is best to seek a conciliatory method of problem solving. It took her a while to get there. When she first started out, in a lot of instances, she was in your face. And she had to evolve and learn when to be in your face and when to, you know, tone it down. And I thought that was very interesting. And I found a lot of myself in that. I used to just go in like a bull in a china closet. And I had to learn that sometimes you can't be the bull in the china closet.
All right. I think it's time now to do an ID, Gloria.
If you're just joining us, we're here again with Danielle Bruce, Kate Braun, Gladys Devane, and our assistant producer, Liz Mitchell, all a part of Resilience Productions. And we're talking about the up and coming play that they are going to be so beautifully putting on for the public here in Bloomington, Polly Murray, of the life and the life of Polly Murray. I'm so excited. I'm getting tongue twisted. I'm so excited about her because even in just reading and preparing for this this broadcast and just the little snippets that we found and reading about her. And I did, Danielle, to what you mentioned at the top of the show about this being an educational experience for folks. I literally was like, let me go find some more things on her like that as I kept reading. And I think that's what you want or what you all have mentioned you want the audience to do. And I'm thinking about, gosh, I need my students to, you know, go learn about this person because we learn about, you know, and that's not to take away from people like Rosa Parks, right? We hear about Rosa Parks. Nobody talks about Polly Murray giving up seats, you know, on the bus. We hear about Bayard Rustin. And Bayard Rustin, of course, there's a great movie that just came out about him. Wonderful film. And I encourage folks to see. But, you know, you didn't see a lot of women leaders. And you could even pick that out in watching the film. And so, you know, but for somebody like Polly Murray to say like, listen, this isn't right, you know, and to actually stand up, and be a voice for folks who were not in the room and women whose voices were not, included at that time is incredibly, incredibly, remarkable. So I wanted to ask also to you all, and Liz, I'm not the historian at all, but I really want to hear your thoughts on this. As I was reading about Polly Murray, particularly with her going to a theological seminary and the Episcopal Church and things like that, my mind went to Elizabeth Bridgewater's. And I was trying to make connections between some of the folks that we hear about and we read about that are may not be like in Bloomington like Polly Murray, but I was trying to connect the pieces to people here that we hear about, obviously, Elizabeth Bridgewater's or Mattie Fuller, those women who were also resilient and remarkable in their own right. So as a historian, Liz, can you talk a little bit about what the implications of this telling this story is, kind of like a hidden gem, if you will? How does that impact your work and further facilitate what you're going to do here in Bloomington with all the historical bits that you're going to find? Because I feel like you're always digging and always going to, Liz is also an investigative reporter, I should say. but I feel like you are always finding things that, you know, that make people go, I never knew this. So can you kind of connect this like life's work, if you will, to what you all are doing with Polly Murray and Resilience Productions? And that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure. Sure. For one thing, I have a passion about digging into history. And it started years ago when I was in my 20s and I was told, I asked a guy, well, why was he so racist? Why did you hate me so much? And I was young, my first job. And he said, because you're living a life off the backs of white people. We made this country what it is. And here you are living off of the backs of that. While I'm standing there, normally I have something to say. I had nothing to say because I had no knowledge. And I said, I'm going to find out what all the minorities have done. I'm going to start with African-Americans. Well, back then it was during the, I'm black and I'm proud. I'm going to start with the blacks. Then after that, I'm going to go to all the other minorities. I'll be 71. I was 18 and 19. It's so much information. I'm still finding out what black people in America have done. So it's a passion for me to do that, first of all. Second of all, especially this is my adopted hometown. And there is connections with Pauli, but there's a connection with women, whether you're black or white or whatever. Anyway, because things weren't set up for us to be part of the community of America. We were supposed to be barefoot
in the kitchen.
Barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. That we couldn't vote, you couldn't own property, you were expected to get married. You know, that was a big concern with grandparents. I don't know about Gladys's grandparents. My grandparents said, well, if you get too much education, nobody's going to want you. That kind of thing. Then when you got jobs, why are you here? I was asked when I started at the post office, why are you here? You're taking a job from a white man. They even told the white women that. We had to fight to get a bathroom, fight to get a locker on a job. So here, this is way after Pauli Murray, way after people like Mattie Jacobs Fuller. I'm sure that Viterra Farrell went through some things being the first judge. I spoke to and interviewed Laverta Terry, the first black school teacher here. And she said all the issues she went through just to have a job she was qualified for. We're not talking about just giving you a job because we need black people. Women are qualified, overqualified. Then you can't get a job. My first job in the Annapolis Police Department, I had an afro in 1971. You got the job, but you can't come in here with an afro because it's intimidating to us. So I had to go to a beautician and get my hair pressed so I can go to work, or else I couldn't go to work. Things like that. We haven't asked men to change their looks so you can have a job. You just come as you are. They may not even be qualified. So this all ties in with women all across America, whether you're here in Bloomington or not. My question is, are we still going through this, and is it under the table? Is it covert? Do you still have to change your hair? Do they still want a light-complected black person versus a dark-complected black person? All of those issues come into play as a woman, and especially as an African-American woman. So Pauli is important to learn about, and it gives you a glimpse of what we as women, no matter where we are in America, have to go through. So that's the connections.
Thank you, Liz.
Yes, absolutely. Any other thoughts on that from anyone else that want to speak on that? Any connections?
I think Liz kind of covered it.
She did. She did a really good job of covering that. Absolutely. Again, in the spirit of Women's History Month, I'm always looking for the takeaways for particularly little girls everywhere, but especially little black and brown girls, who I meet a lot of, and you all know that I work at the Black Culture Center. So I meet a lot of young students who they're easily moved, if you will. And that can be on both sides, easily moved to do something, but also the first, roadblock that comes, they're like, oh, well, maybe it's just not meant for me to do. Or maybe I just shouldn't pursue that. And I think about all the stories that you all have shared, Kate, even about your education and how, you got to 39 and you could have been just like, forget it, and I'm doing well just as I am. I don't have to do this. Gladys, I've heard you talk And it always inspires me about your own pursuit of being an actress and all those types of things, and maybe doing that later, starting later than some other folks would have. But I want you to speak to our audience who may be sitting around with mom and dad at the dinner table listening to this broadcast, particularly if it's a little girl who has some big dreams. Maybe she's a college student, has some big dreams, and maybe she is being pushed to be a nurse or a teacher, which there's nothing wrong with being nurses and teachers, but maybe that's not what she really wants to do. And she wants to be an entrepreneur, or she wants to be an artist. But there are things that are kind of standing in her way. Can you speak to those young women, and what would you say to them?
What would I say to them? I would say to them what my mother and what my grandmother always said to me. If this is what you really want, you go after it. My mom used to say to me, and my mom, I think, maybe had a seventh grade, eighth grade education at the most. And she would say to me, you know, and I grew up in a time where women grew up and married and had babies. And I wanted to go to college. And my mom would, and I was not the sharp, my family teases me about this. I was not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Well, it turned out that the sharpest knife in the drawer did not accomplish what the dullest knife in the drawer accomplished. Because my mom said to me, if you want it, you must get it for yourself. She used to say to me, you know, it might be nice if you marry and marry a good man, but what if you don't marry a good man? You must be able to take care of yourself. And so it never occurred to me that I needed a man to take care of me. And so I think that's the bottom line. You've got to say to yourself, I want this. I am willing to do what is necessary to do in order to get it, as long as it is legal and it is not immoral and it is not going to get you thrown in jail. So that's my comment.
I was going to bring up something. I'm working on another documentary, and I've discovered something that I didn't know and didn't think about, talking about the control of men and how things are run by men. So here in Indiana, up in Putnam County, we're talking about a family who the men went off to war, the black men and the white men. The white women had to report to their husbands. Now they're fighting in a war. They told them, wrote letters back on how to run the household. So the women, even though it was left up to them, they had to get permission or have a letter or something from their husbands saying it's okay to do thus and so. They had to write back to their husbands, giving them reports. I'm taking care of this. This is how the education is going for your children, this and that. So here they are on the battlefield, still running things back at home. I never thought about that and just how much power men had at that time. And look how many hundreds of years it's taken just to kind of get to where we are now. And you know, you don't know if you've written a letter and that person may have died on the battlefield. You had to wait and see, but you had to do what he said. It just blows my mind. So that's part of the documentary. I wanted to make sure it doesn't get on the cutting room floor, to put that out there, that these women had to obey men who were hundreds of miles away fighting and waiting on a letter, instructions on what to do. Now, how about that? It just blows my mind.
I'm frightened by this story, Liz. I am.
it's a lot to tell.
it really blows my mind. And I think it's because I think for centuries and beyond, women have had the ability to do absolutely every single thing a man can do. I mean, have they had the opportunity or the permission? No, but the ability, yes. And so I look at that and I think when we're talking to young Black and Brown women today, I think that you have to persevere. If you want, as Gladys said, if you want something enough. And I was very blessed to grow up in an environment that freedom of expression was the greatest thing that was given to both my sister and I. We were never told we couldn't, we didn't, our thoughts didn't matter, or it was always encouraged. And anything we felt or thought or believed or wanted to talk about was absolutely welcome and encouraged, in fact. And so now if I go into an environment where I have to, I'm a woman and it's kind of a second tier kind of situation. I blow right past that. I don't even know what that means. And so it's like everybody is equal. Their thoughts are all important, you know? And so I've never known that kind of distinction. And so I feel like, and maybe that's been part of it has been audacious, but part of it has actually been really kind of self-preserving in that way, because I have just blown right past it and thought, well, if I want to do it, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to work hard to do it, you know? And that's what really mattered to me. And so I think that you have to somehow, if you dignify some of those things, I think people are going to wait and they're going to say, oh yeah, well, you know, I have to write to my husband on the battlefield, for instance, you know, or if you go, I'm just going to run this household, you know, and I'm not saying it's about being a rebel. I'm saying you have to do what needs to be done. Yeah. And that sometimes may not be what the norm is or, you know, what socially is acceptable at that time. But, you know, I think if you know your intention and it's good, then you have to go on and you have to do it, you know, and I really encourage women to look at that, their context and say, you know, if this is something they want enough, they're going to do it without anybody's permission, you know?
Kate, why should our listening audience go see this play? Pauli Murray, I've Come Full Circle. Would you answer that question for me?
She'll break your heart. She'll inspire you. She'll make you get on whatever AI, Google, or whoever you can find, or it'll make you go to the library. She had such a big, big heart, compassion, and she was a rebel, and she was confrontational until Eleanor told her to be a little more conciliatory. But she's kept me going for the last 3 years. She's been part of my life, so I don't know what to tell them except be there. I've already got about 15 coming, so I'm trying to get a lot more. I want to educate the world as much as I want to be educated. So,
okay. And Gladys, what would you tell the listening audience? Why should they come and see this play?
They should come and see this play because it takes you to a place back there that existed, and it makes you realize that as much as we would like to think a lot of things have changed, all of this has changed, we're still fighting some of the same battles. They're dressed up differently, and we must recognize this, and we must deal with it. And one of the other things that I want to say, we talk about how we were programmed back there as women to behave in a certain way. I would like to say to the young women now that are coming along, you must learn how to, in a non-confrontational way, challenge the person who is talking to you to rethink the way they are thinking about the way the world should operate. For example, my mom used to say to me, now I've gone to work and worked 8 hours. I've picked up the kids from the babysitter. I've made them dinner. I have gotten them ready for, you know, school tomorrow. Dad is just coming in because he has been traveling as his job. And my mom is saying to me, aren't you going to jump up and make him some dinner? Aren't you going to, you know, fix the tape? And I said, Mom, I put the food on the stove. I think he can, you know, turn the heat on under it and warm it up and put it on his plate. You mean to tell me you're not going to fix his plate? Finally, I would have to say to her, Mom, I appreciate what you're saying, but if you feel so strongly about that, you can go in and fix his dinner for him. Things like things like you're supposed to behave in a certain way. You've got to gently lead those people who believe this way to think about this in a different way. I remember my parents saying to me, or when Gino said to me, "Well, Mom, I don't think that's fair." And I said to him, "Well, honey, why don't you think that's fair?" He's 13 years old. "Why don't you think that's fair?" And I let him explain why he didn't think that was fair. And then I said to him, "Well, I appreciate what you're saying there, but you still got to do it." And my mom said to me, "You let him say to you that you don't think that he doesn't think that." I said, "Mom, you got to listen to what the child is saying. It doesn't mean you're going to agree with him. It doesn't mean you're going to let him do what, but you've got to bring them, bring them on to a new way of thinking about things."
Okay. Well, Danielle, we're just about running out of time. You have enough time for one little comment, Gloria?
Yeah, I definitely want Danielle to, if possible, to remind folks where they can get tickets again. Yes.
That's right. That's right. Okay. That's what I was
going to do. I would love to. The show is on Friday, March 22nd and Saturday, March 23rd at 6 p.m. and March 24th, a matinee. It's a Sunday at 3 p.m. And there's a talk back with refreshments after every show. And it's at the Monroe County History Center, which is 202 East 6th Street. And the phone number, if you're going to get your tickets by phone, is 812-332-2517, or you can get them online at monroehistory.org. And we really hope you come out and check this show out. I mean, it should inspire you. If nothing else, it should inspire you to look at history and pay attention to history. But hopefully it'll inspire you to get up and do absolutely everything you're thinking about doing with your life. That would be the best thing.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you, Danielle. It's a beautiful way to wrap up our conversation for today. We have had joining us tonight to discuss the theatrical production of Polly Murray, I've Come Full Circle, Resilience Productions cast members Gladys Devane, Danielle Bruce, Kate Braun, and our very own Bring It On assistant producer Liz Mitchell.
Bring It On has an open submission policy. So if you have an idea for this program, we want to hear it. Send an email to our volunteer staff. We will make sure that we share everything and anything affecting the African-American community with our listening audience in Bloomington and beyond. The email address is bringiton@wfhb.org.
Our show's executive producer is Clarence Boone. Assistant producer is Liz Mitchell. Our consultant and WFHB News Department director is Cade Young. Our program engineer is Chantal LaFontant. Our original theme music was created by Jamil Ephium, with additional background tracks by David Baker. For WFHB, I'm Gloria Howell.
It's been our pleasure to have you join us this evening. I'm Liz Mitchell. Be sure to tune in next Monday at 6 p.m. for another edition of Bring It On, right here on your community radio station, WFHB.
You've been listening to Bring It On, a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Bring It On is your forum for open dialogue on the people, issues, and events affecting the African-American community in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas directly to the Bring It On staff. The email address is bringit@wfhb.org.
That's bringit@wfhb.org.